Shabbat Shalom, everybody. We are looking at the book of Nehemiah, and we've arrived in our reading, chapter 10. Last time we looked at chapter 9, and we entitled it The Great Confession. In their confession, the people who wished to be right with God confessed that though he had been faithful to their covenant, they had not been faithful to it. They recounted in their confession in chapter 9 the plagues God sent upon Egypt, dividing the Red Sea, how God guided them by a pillar of cloud and fire, how he gave them the law at Mount Sinai, fed them with bread from heaven and gave them water for their thirst from the rock, how he gave them spiritual guidance, clothes that endured, that didn't wear out, healthy feet. Their feet did not swell, which is quite a blessing. Deliverance from their enemies and multiplied forgivenesses. Those are the divine mercies that they recounted in chapter 9. Towards the end of chapter 9, verse 36 to 38, they embarked upon a new covenant with God. Let's read verse 36. Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 36. Here we are, servants today, and the land that you gave to our fathers to eat its fruit and its good things, here we are, servants in it, and it yields much increase to the kings you have set over us because of our sins. Also they have dominion over our bodies and our cattle at their pleasure, and we are in great distress. And because of all this, we make a sure covenant and write it, and our leaders and our Levites and our priests seal it. So in chapter 10, they spell out their commitments to God's ways. In verse 29 of chapter 10, we read, they joined with their brethren, their nobles, and entered into a curse and an oath to walk in God's law. In verse 30, no intermarriage. Verse 31, keeping the Sabbaths and the seventh year, the year of release. Verse 32, charges for the temple service. Verse 33, temple supplies. Verse 34, the offering of wood for the sacrificial altar. Verse 35, annual first fruits. Verse 36, commitment of the firstborn of men and beasts to God. Verse 37, tithes and offerings. Verse 38, support of the priests, and verse 39, a vow of true worship. Quite a list of commitments that they mentioned here. Let's look at them one by one. We begin at chapter 10, verse 1. Now those who placed their seal on the document were Nehemiah the governor, the son of Hachaliah, and Zedekiah, and then follow the names of priests. Nehemiah was their governor. He was also from the priestly tribe of Levi. And as an example, he first put his pen to the document. What they had said was, we make a sure covenant and write it, and our leaders and our Levites and our priests seal it. Then follow a list of names, right down to verse 8. After recounting the names of the priests, we read in verse 8, Maaseiah, Bilgai, and Shemaiah, these were the priests. 23 priests in all, including Nehemiah. Then, following the priests, the names of the Levites. Verse 9. The Levites, Yeshua, the son of Azaniah, Binui of the sons of Henadad, and Kadmiel and their brethren, 17 in all. Then verse 14, the leaders of the people, Parosh, Pahat Moab, Elam, Zattu, Bani, etc., 44 people in all. And then from verse 28, the rest of the people. So we have a list of the priests, the leaders of the Levites, and now, besides the leading figures above, the following from among the people who subscribed to the covenant. Verse 28 tells us, now the rest of the people, the priests, the Levites, the gatekeepers, the singers, the Nethinim, and all those who had separated themselves from the peoples of the lands to the law of God, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, everyone who had knowledge and understanding. Besides the leading figures before that, these are the following names among the people who subscribed to the covenant, and it was written about them that they separated themselves from the world to God. And it was not only the fathers and the husbands and the menfolk, it was the whole family unit that was involved. Verse 28, we read, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, everyone who had knowledge and understanding, so that those who subscribed to the covenant were making an intelligent commitment, a commitment that they understood, so it would exempt the little children who had not yet learned to read or to write. This kind of commitment is already found in Acts chapter 16, when Paul and Silas were delivered from their bonds, from the stocks in the jail. We read that the jailer thought that they had fled, and he was about to kill himself. Paul and Silas cried out with a loud voice, do thyself no harm, we are all here. And the jailer sprang into the cell, fell on his knees before them and said, sirs, what must I do to be saved? Their answer is a classic one. Believe on the Lord Yeshua Mashiach, and you shall be saved and your house. Now obviously the precept to believe applied to all those who were old enough to believe. It didn't mean that those under age of understanding were included, but it applied to all those who believed. Believe on the Lord Yeshua and you shall be saved, and all your house, that is to say, all your family who are capable of believing. And it's the same here too, an intelligent commitment, having understanding and knowledge. Verse 29, they joined with their brethren, their nobles, and entered into a curse and an oath to walk in God's ways. They heartily complied with their leaders, and the curse was for the violators of the covenant. The oath was a solemn promise of obedience. Verse 29, the second half. God's law, which was given by Moses, the servant of God, and to observe and do all the commandments of the Lord our God, and his ordinances and his statutes. Verse 30, that we would not give our daughters as wives to the peoples of the land, nor take their daughters for our sons. Intermarriage was prohibited here, just as in the days of Ezra. If we go back to Ezra chapter 9, this was the evil that they sought to avoid committing once again. Ezra chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. Now when these things were done, the leaders came to me saying, the people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the peoples of the lands with respect to the abominations of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites. For they have taken some of their daughters as wives for themselves and their sons, so that the holy seed is intermingled with the peoples of those lands. Indeed, The hand of the leaders and rulers has been foremost in this trespass. Ezra came about 10 or more years before Nehemiah, and he reformed these abuses. He made sure that they stopped doing this evil practice of intermarriage with heathens. Intermarriage was here underlined again in Nehemiah chapter 10, verse 30. That we would not give our daughters as wives to the peoples of the land, nor take their daughters for our sons. The next pledge that they included in their commitment was in verse 31, concerning the Sabbath day and those feast days. Verse 31, that if the peoples of the land bring wares or any grain to sell on the Sabbath day, we would not buy it from them on the Sabbath or on a holy day, and that we would forego the 7th year's produce and the exaction of every debt. Those weekly Sabbaths and those feast days, which were also called Sabbaths, were to be honored. And then there's also the 7th year that we read about. We would forego the 7th year's produce and the exaction of every debt. To understand what is meant by that, let's turn to the book of Exodus, chapter 21. Exodus chapter 21, verse 1. Now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the 7th he shall go out free and pay nothing. That's one of these precepts that were being underlined, and again in chapter 23 of Exodus and verse 11. 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce, but the 7th year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave, the beasts of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the 7th day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your maidservant and the stranger may be refreshed. So these were the precepts that they underlined in their new commitment under Nehemiah, their governor. Coming back to Nehemiah chapter 10, the next precept was in verse 32. Also we made ordinances for ourselves to exact from ourselves yearly 1/3 of a shekel for the service of the house of our God. Temple service was to be supported by voluntary tribute. And then in verse 33, they show where the funds went. Verse 33, for the showbread, for the regular grain offering, for the regular burnt offering of the Sabbaths, the new moons and the set feasts, for the holy things, for the sin offerings, to make atonement for Israel and all the work of the house of our God. Previously, these were supplied by the king, but now they didn't have a king, and so the duty came upon themselves. The next thing that they committed to was in verse 34. We cast lots among the priests, the Levites, and the people for bringing the wood offering into the house of our God, according to our fathers' houses, at the appointed times, year by year, to burn on the altar of the Lord our God, as it is written in the law. This wood was needed to maintain the fire on the altar, and the sacrifices are always laid on top of the wood of the burnt offering. Verse 35, the next commitment was about the first fruits. Verse 35, and we made ordinances to bring the first fruits of our ground and the first fruit of all trees year by year to the house of the Lord. Agricultural produce was to be brought in year by year to feed the Levites. Again, we turn to Exodus chapter 23, verse 19. The first of the first fruits of your land you shall bring into the house of the Lord your God. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. So there is the commitment that they made. Also in Nehemiah 10, verse 36, not only the first fruits of produce, agricultural produce, but first fruits of flocks and herds and of families. Verse 36 tells us, to bring the firstborn of our sons and our cattle, as it is written in the law, and the firstlings of our herds and our flocks, to the house of our God, to the priests who minister in the house of our God. For an explanation of that in the law, we go back again to Exodus chapter 13, verse 11 to 13. Exodus 13, verse 11 to 13. And it shall be, when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your fathers, and gives it to you, that you shall set apart to the Lord all that open the womb, that is, every firstling that comes from an animal which you have. The males shall be the Lord's, but every firstling of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. If you will not redeem it, then you shall break its neck, and all the firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem. So the firstborn of the flocks and herds were brought to the priests, and they were the ones that they fed upon. But when it came to firstborn sons, they could be redeemed. And the redemption price was 5 shekels of silver. Numbers chapter 18, verse 16. Numbers 18, verse 16. Let me read verse 15. Everything that first opens the womb of all flesh, which they bring to the Lord, whether man or beast, shall be yours. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man you shall surely redeem, and the firstborn of unclean animals you shall redeem. And those redeemed of the devoted things you shall redeem when 1 month old, according to your valuation, for 5 shekels of silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. So the firstborn sons were bought back into the family, and the price was paid 5 shekels. Today the service is called Pidyon HaBen, the redemption of the firstborn. In that ceremony, the boy that is firstborn in the family is presented to a descendant of the priest, someone by the name of Kohen or Levi. The child was presented to the priest, and the priest then said to the father, which would you rather, that I take your son, or would you rather redeem him for 5 shekels of silver? And invariably the father says, I would rather redeem him for 5 shekels of silver. Here you have the 5 shekels. And he handed over 5 shekels to the priest. The priest took the little boy and gave him back to the father, and the ceremony was over, apart from the celebrations. This was done for firstborn sons. For sons, redemption was allowed. For animals, if they were unclean, they had to be redeemed, but if not, they were given to the priest. The next commitment was in verse 37 of chapter 10. To bring the firstfruits of our dough, our offerings, the fruit from all kinds of trees, the new wine and oil, to the priests, to the storerooms of the house of our God, and to bring the tithes of our land to the Levites, for the Levites should receive the tithes in all our farming communities. All were to be stored in the temple chambers and to be taken out as needed by the Levites to have food. The next precept was in verse 38. And the priest, the descendant of Aaron, shall be with the Levites when the Levites receive tithes. And the Levites shall bring up a tenth of the tithes to the house of our God, to the rooms of the storehouse. So they were all stored away carefully to be used as needed. And lastly, a concluding vow in verse 39. For the children of Israel, and the children of Levi shall bring the offering of the grain, of the new wine and the oil, to the storerooms where the articles of the sanctuary are, where the priests who minister and the gatekeepers and the singers are, and we will not neglect the house of our God. So they spelled out their commitment. Here are their commitments again. Verse 29, commitment to walk in God's law. Verse 30, no intermarriage with heathen. Verse 31, observation of the Sabbaths and the seventh year. Verse 32, charges for the temple service. Verse 33, temple supplies. Verse 34, wood offering. Verse 35, annual first fruits. Verse 36, animal and human firstborn. Verse 37, tithes and offerings. Verse 38, support of priests. And verse 39, a concluding vow that they would worship. We will not neglect the house of our God. Having spelled out their commitment, the next thing they did was to distribute the number of people that were going to be in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was largely desolate. It had been ruined by the enemy. So they needed people to repopulate Jerusalem. And they chose 1 in 10. Let's look at chapter 11, verse 1 and 2. Now the leaders of the people dwelt at Jerusalem. The rest of the people cast lots to bring 1 out of 10 to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, and 9/10 were to dwell in other cities. And the people blessed all the men who willingly offered themselves to dwell at Jerusalem. So the government was centered in the capital city, and the ones who led the way were the leaders of the people. The rest cast lots so that 1 in 10 would come and live in Jerusalem. That meant they would have to leave their hometown and come and live in Jerusalem. Verse 3. Now these are the heads of the province who dwelt in Jerusalem. But in the cities of Judah, everyone dwelt in his own possession in their cities. Israelites, priests, Levites, Nethinim, and descendants of Solomon's servants. Verse 4. Also in Jerusalem dwelt certain of the children of Judah and of the children of Benjamin. Jerusalem straddled the boundaries of the tribe of Judah and of Benjamin. So some people would opt to live in Jerusalem for that reason. Verse 4 tells us the children of Judah, Athaiah the son of Uzziah, the son of Zechariah, the son of Amariah, the son of Shephatiah, the son of Mahalalel, of the children of Perez. That lengthy genealogy is to point out that this person was descended from the children of Perez. It's significant because Perez was an ancestor of Messiah. And now here we see the ancestor of Messiah taking his place in Jerusalem, ready for Messiah's arrival to their land. Perez was the son of Judah. Then we have lists of names. Verse 6. And all the sons of Perez who dwelt at Jerusalem were 468 valiant men. Leaders and soldiers, 468 persons. And then verse 7 describes the people in the tribe of Benjamin. Verse 8. After him, Gabai and Salai, 928. Greater number of leaders, perhaps, because Jerusalem was in the tribe of Benjamin. And then whole lists of names. Verse 15, we come to the Levites. Also of the Levites, Shemaiah, the son of Hashub, the son of Azrikam, the son of Hashabiah, the son of Buni. Shabbatai and Jozabad of the heads of the Levites at the oversight of the business outside of the house of God. Verse 18, all the Levites in the holy city were 284. So we have the leaders, the priests, the descendants of Judah. We have the Levites. Now we have the gatekeepers, verse 19. Moreover, the gatekeepers, Akub, Talmon, and their brethren who kept the gates were 172. Verse 20, and the rest of Israel, of the priests and Levites, were in all the cities of Judah, everyone in his own inheritance. But the Nethinim dwelt in Ophel, and Ziha and Gishpa were over the Nethinim. So we have the various categories of people living in Jerusalem. Verse 25, and as for the villages with their fields, some of the children of Judah dwelt in Kiriath Arba and its villages, Dibon and its villages, Jekabzeel and its villages, etc. Verse 31, also the children of Benjamin from Geba dwelt in Michmash, Aya, and Bethel and their villages, etc. Verse 36, some of the Judean divisions of Levites were in Benjamin. So we come to chapter 12. Now these are the priests and the Levites who came up with Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Yeshua, Seraiah, Jeremiah, Ezra, etc. This is a tally of the priests that came up with Zerubbabel. And then came the list of the present day Levites. Verse 22 of chapter 12. During the reign of Darius the Persian, a record was also kept of the Levites and priests who had been heads of their fathers' houses in the days of Eliashib, Joiada, Yohanan, and Jaddua. Verse 26, to cut it short, these lived in the days of Joiakim, the son of Yeshua, the son of Josadak, and in the days of Nehemiah, the governor, and of Ezra, the priest, the scribe. So much for the tallies, for the genealogies, for the name lists. We come now to the dedication of the wall. The wall was completed, but now, having uttered their great confession and made their great commitment, they now dedicated the wall of Jerusalem. Chapter 12, verse 27. Here was the emphasis on thanksgiving for the wall and for the city. Verse 27 of chapter 12. Now at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought out the Levites in all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to celebrate the dedication with gladness, both with thanksgiving and singing, with cymbals and stringed instruments and harps. And the sons of the singers gathered together from the countryside around Jerusalem, from the villages of the Netophathites, etc. Verse 30, then the priests and Levites purified themselves and purified the people, the gates, and the wall. Verse 31, two great companies were appointed to go up on the wall. One went to the left and the other went to the right. They both circled the wall and met in the middle on the other side of the wall. Verse 31, so I brought the leaders of Judah up on the wall and appointed two large thanksgiving choirs, one of which went to the right hand on the wall toward the refuse gate, etc. And he mentions all the gates that they passed through. Verse 38, the next one was, the other thanksgiving choir went the opposite way, and I was behind them with half of the people on the wall, going past the Tower of the Ovens as far as the broad wall. At this point, could someone give the signal to the children to get ready to come up? Because after this chapter, we are going to sound the shofar, and following the sounding of the shofar, I'll pronounce the priestly blessing. So while the children are coming, we'll finish this chapter. Verse 40. So the two thanksgiving choirs stood in the house of God, likewise I and the half of the rulers with me, and the priests. Verse 43. Also that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced, for God had made them rejoice with great joy. The women and the children also rejoiced, so that the joy of Jerusalem was heard afar off. It was like that when they laid the foundation of the temple. This time the celebration was for the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem. Verse 44 to 47 end this chapter. And at the same time, some were appointed over the rooms of the storehouse for the offerings, the first fruits, and the tithes, to gather into them from the fields of the cities the portions specified by the law for the priests and Levites. For Judah rejoiced over the priests and Levites who ministered. Both the singers and the gatekeepers kept the charge of their God and the charge of the purification, according to the command of David and Solomon his son. For in the days of David and Asaph of old, there were chiefs of the singers and songs of praise and thanksgiving to God. In the days of Zerubbabel and in the days of Nehemiah, all Israel gave the portions for the singers and the gatekeepers, a portion for each day. They also consecrated holy things for the Levites, and the Levites consecrated them for the children of Aaron. So ends all these name lists, all those preparations. And here come the children. I'm going to ask Steve, please, to come up and blow the shofar. Shall we pause for the priestly benediction? After that, we have one more song before we go downstairs. Would you stand with me? Yevarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha. Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'chuneka. Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. In the name of Yeshua our Messiah. Amen.